Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikaias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, doing great. Thanks for having me, per usual. I'm excited to be here. I'm hyped up. Maybe I'm excited for turkey. I don't know. I got the energy. I just want to say thank you to you, Nikaias, for having me and not replacing me with Katino Mobile yet. And I'm thankful to all of you dunkers out there just for your support, the way you listen. I mean, to think about it, a year ago, this pod didn't even exist. And now we're here doing this twice a week. So shout out to y'all. Hopefully everyone's able to have a blessed time and a blessed day. And shout out to those who this may not be the best time of the year for. Just know that you are loved. Know that there is support there for you. There are wins out there for you. We all have blessings. We're all going through it, but we all find a way at the end of the day.
That was beautiful. Thanks for not big timing me as a guy with coaching pedigree, video pedigree. Like, you've worked in the league, you've never had to do a podcast with little old me, but you do so. So I am very appreciative of you taking time out of your week to listen to my nonsense and apparently slander every player over the age of 30. So,
we've gotten you past that point. You love Dwayne Dedman.
Okay.
You turned the corner on LaMarcus, and I am the smallest of small time. I'm just a dude.
Oh, brother. It's funny. This all started with people turning the corner on LaMarcus, and now look at where we are. That's a good shot.
This is a fun one. I'm glad we did this. This is a good idea.
We are here. We are recording on a Wednesday night, since Thursday is Thanksgiving for those who celebrate it. I want to echo all of Steve's sentiments. He said it a lot better than I probably would. So, just press rewind if you want to hear that beautiful soliloquy again. But I am very appreciative to everyone that listens. And in all seriousness, like, thank you for doing this podcast with me. Like, I am a much smarter basketball watcher because of your expertise. So I do not take that for granted at all.
I appreciate you. Just don't forget me when you get the big bucks.
I don't know, man. You're getting the Bill Simmons shout out and all this different stuff. I don't know. I might only have you for another two or three episodes. Who's to say?
I might only have 6 months of content left in me. So enjoy it while you can.
Oh, goodness. I don't like that. See, I had a segue to this. I feel like that would have been a little bit too rough, so I'm not going to use the segue that I had in mind. But there seems to be a little bit of unease in Houston right now. Bleacher Report's Jake Fisher reported earlier today, again, recording on a Wednesday night. Jake Fisher reported earlier today that Steven Silas's job may be in jeopardy because of how rough the start has been in Houston. The obvious context, this is a very young team. This is a rebuilding team. They're trying to develop Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green and Josh Christopher and Alperen Sengun. And I don't know. Like, it's not a surprise that they're bad. I'm not sure if anyone anticipated them being this level of bad. And maybe that's where the question mark comes in. Steve, what was your initial reaction when that story dropped?
I had thoughts. My first thought was, I'm going to try and keep this as organized as I can. My first one was that really stinks for Steven Silas. You know, you spend 20 years to get to this moment. 20 years, various positions, various teams to get to this moment, to get that head coaching job. You get it, and the job immediately changes because the business and the business. And now in year two, this comes out less than 20 games in. And so that stinks. And then I think about it more. And when we came into the season, I was really excited about the Rockets. Really excited about the Rockets. I wanted to see them play. I like their young talent. I like the fact that they just said, hey, let's go young. Let's see what we got. I liked what they did in the second half of last season, just play style-wise. It was a lot more open. You know, it kind of felt like for the majority of that first year for Coach Silas, he was navigating what he had and trying to make what he wanted to do fit what he had. And then as things opened up, it looked like he got more into what he wanted to do offensively, what he wanted to do defensively. And there was hope there, it looked fun. And so I was thinking, wow, okay, maybe that's what he needed. Maybe he just needed those group of guys. And a young team is not always easy to coach. You know, obviously you got to worry about the thought about winning, teaching guys how to play, developing. Will the execution be there? All that good stuff. But that's been my one disappointment with this season. They just haven't been very fun. You know, we haven't seen them be a feisty young team. They've just been a young team. And when you start 1-16, it does raise some eyebrows. And with the roster mix, you know, is a situation where maybe some of the young guys they want to play or need to play aren't playing. You know, you never know these kind of details. And if you have a young team, you can't just be bad. You know, unless you're the process, you can't just be bad. But at least with the process, I mean, the process, they were running the Spurs sets for like 2.5 years. So there was some sort of basketball visibility there. When you have a young team, you got to take steps forward. And I think when you're just non-competitive and you're not seeing the progress, now you become in question. So any wiggle room that you had, it's like, wait, what's going on here? Like, we know the mission, but at the same time, it's not supposed to look like this. So I don't like that he's in question this early into year two. But if you take your mind and think about the Houston perspective, hey, we still need to perceive ourselves in a certain way. We still need to compete, and we want these young guys to look a certain way. So it's just tough. I wish it wasn't coming to this point this early in what he was doing, but I think he's got to find a way to rally these guys, coach these guys up, and get back to doing what he wants to do. I think that's been the one part that's been missing.
It is unfortunate. It's unfair in a way, because as you mentioned, like, things shifted pretty much at the snap of a finger. Like, he got the job and it's okay. Your assignment is to figure out how to make Russell Westbrook and James Harden work. And before the season even starts, Russell Westbrook is gone. And it's like, okay, now your assignment is to try to make James Harden and John Wall work. But first, you need to get James Harden into training camp because he's partying with Lil Baby and stuff. And it's just like, if this is the start of the job, it's understandable that there are going to be some growing pains here. And so you fast forward to now and you look at the personnel on the roster, and it's very young. And there are talented young guys on the roster. There are talented vets on the roster. But there doesn't seem to be a ton of, like, complementary talents on the roster. So from a lineup building perspective, it's kind of tough to do that while also trying to balance, all right, we need these vets to help these guys learn how to play. We need these vets, looking at you, Eric Gordon, that can maybe rehab some value. Maybe we could trade them a little bit later. We have these young guys that we're prioritizing, Jalen Green, Kevin Porter Jr. We have these other young guys that we want to play, but we have guys ahead of them. And it's just like, that's a lot for anyone to balance, much less a first-time head coach, you know, heading into year two, fresh off of the year one being completely flipped. And so, it's understandable that Houston's bad. Now, losing 15 straight games bad, worst offense in the league by a good margin bad, highest turnover percentage since the process Sixers bad. Like, all of that is in personnel. And like you mentioned, like, they did seem a lot more fun towards the end of the year. And this season, like, the offense just seemed so bland. And I do think, you know, to a certain degree, you kind of have to simplify things because you have so many young ball handlers on the squad. You don't want to run a bunch of complex up. But at the same time, it's just like, you already have personnel limitations. You can't also have scheme limitations on top of that. And I do think there's some of that with Steven Silas. But even with that, I wish the answer was, okay, let's move some pieces around. Let's give our head coach that's now in year two and year one to rebuild, let's give him some time to figure this out. Instead of, I don't know if he's the one for this. Because I don't think he's really gotten a fair shake really at any turn in this.
Business is the business, and you always know what the first thing is to point at. I'll point at the person I hired rather than the team I put together. But maybe that's too real for a Wednesday.
Yeah. I don't think it's too real. Like, we can talk about it. Like, they're expecting him to make lemonade out of lemons. And, like,
it's a tough spot, man. My bad. Keep going.
No, let's just say, like, I don't think he's made the best lemonade, which is why there is some merit to being like, hey, maybe we have to go in. I can understand him thinking maybe we have to go in a different direction at some point. Maybe he's not the long-term answer. Like, I think it's okay to have those questions based on, like, some of the lineup decisions, some of the scheme stuff, particularly offensively. I get that being the thinking. But, like, him potentially being out this year, that seems to be a bit much to me. I wrote about this a little bit at basketballnews.com. And, like, one of the examples I'll link it to, funny enough, like, I thought back to last year's Timberwolves. And where it's like, you look at the stat sheet, and it's like, okay, the Wolves are taking a healthy amount of shots at the rim. They're taking a healthy amount of shots for three. The offense is bad. Process is good. And then you watch how they're getting those shots. And it's like, oh, they're not really stressing the defense at all. This is a lot of one action, Cat do something, or one action, Anthony Edwards do something, one action, D'Lo do something, and a lot of standing around. And that's kind of the feel I get with the Rockets this year, too, where you look at stat sheets, I think the number was like 79.8% of their shots were coming from three or at the rim. And, like, statistically, like, that's good. You want shots from those fruitful areas of the floor. But if it's coming like Houston's doing it, it's an early drag screen and then an ISO, a middle pick and roll, and then an ISO. And all your shots are contested. Like, it doesn't matter if they're coming from good areas of the floor. And, like, that process, like, you can look at Steven Silas in that regard. Like, okay, what's this? And so if Houston feels like there is a version of, like, a Chris Finch out there that could juice the offense or may be a better fit for, like, a development, you know, a rebuild situation, then I get doing your due diligence as an organization. But again, like, I don't think we have enough of a sample to know if Silas can't do it.
No, especially not with this team. I would feel a lot different if he had had this young team last year and then year two started 1-16.
Yeah.
Then I'd be like, okay, I understand where you're coming from. Here, it's too many moving pieces. Let that man coach. Let that man live. Also, you're basically telling me analytics don't matter?
That is not what Now you trying to hit me with a gotcha not even 10 minutes into the podcast. Absolutely not.
No, I feel like someone would laugh at that, so I went for it. I'm sorry, man.
I appreciate it. I'll be the test dummy on that. It's cool. But And I feel bad for Steven Silas. I feel bad for Rockets fans having to watch this because, like, you go from James Harden to a rebuild. At the very least, you want to have fun watching the rebuild. And I can't imagine they've had a lot of fun watching this season.
Boy, it looked like it was going to be fun. I mean, you got KPJ, you got Jalen Green, you got Sengun. There should be fun there. It's turned into a big old green bean casserole.
Sheesh.
See what I did there?
I do see what you did.
Also, real quick, I know we got to get to the mailbag, but it's kind of weird. They just, like, exile John Wall, but also give Eric Gordon and DJ Augustin mad reps.
I guess they're easier to move.
That makes sense. I don't know. This free John Wall thing is going to blow up here in 2 weeks.
It's such an odd spot because it's like the answer is agree to a buyout or sit. Like, that's just a lot of money.
Well, I mean, considering, I'm not going to say what I want to say, but of those two options, there's truly only one for Houston.
Yeah. Price of the brick, et cetera. I'll pick it up what you're putting down. So I don't have much sympathy in that regard. I'll say that much. But okay, a quick note before we move to the mailbag. On Denver side, PJ Dozier tore his ACL. So hopefully he gets better as soon as possible. Also, I just don't know how much more Denver can take, man. Like, at a, like what? Who has the voodoo doll on Denver? Because this doesn't make sense to me.
It's too much. I feel so bad for PJ Dozier, especially with this year. I mean, you don't want your opportunity to come because of injuries, but this was a chance for him to really grow and become more comfortable. And we've seen him kind of build up and look like, hey, he can play two ways, got some scoring pop, shot was coming along a little bit, defense was there, contributing. And just to have your season lost at this time in your career is tough. The Denver deal, I don't understand what's happening there with the injuries. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't want to say the curse word, but it's just like enough. Like, just turn injuries off for Denver at the very least. Please. Turn injuries off, period. But let's just turn them off for Denver. Let's bump the sliders down a little bit. Let's reset the console. That was fun back. That was fun back in the day. You make a mistake trying to unplug the console real quick. Am I dating myself? Someone out there has to have done that.
No, I understand where you're coming from there.
That's what I get for trading for Melo in 2K.
You know what was a quick NBA Live 07 note. The trading logic was so broken on that game. Incredibly good. Broken to the point where, if I can remember the deal, James Posey, Antoine Walker, Shandon Anderson, and a first-round pick would get you Melo and something. And that never made sense to me. Just ridiculous. Granted, I didn't mind. Give me Dwayne Wade, Melo, and Shaq on the same team. Like, sure, I'll do that. But okay. Well, we could do a video game pod at some point. This will not be the one.
Yeah, Dunkers, let us know if you want us to just go random. We'll do it.
We will, in fact, do it. We're going to have some theme pods throughout the season. This is a long season. Another quick note before we get into the actual mailbag. Like, this is year one, well, I guess season two, technically, of the Dunker Spot. Like, you know, we start the pod basically in January of last year. So, like, there were a lot of games played. We kind of finished out the regular season, went to the playoffs, and then postseason stuff, whatever. Well, offseason stuff, whatever. Now trying to do a full-blown regular season, it's different pacing. We're finding our way. So, again, as we mentioned at the top, like, we really do appreciate you rocking with us the way that you do.
Yeah, stick with us. It's going to get better. We'll get in shape. Don't you worry about it. We're not Sean Kemp.
Sheesh.
Oh, I took the Rain Man out. I don't feel good about that. I'm sorry.
Sean Kemp's landing on the podcast. This is amazing.
Bad.
Man, did not see that coming. All right. Let's move on to the mailbag. Per usual, if you have questions for us, you don't have to wait for me to say, hey, we're having a mailbag episode. If you have questions at any time of the day, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We will get to them at the end of really any episode we feel like it, and especially a themed one like this where we're just doing a mailbag. So if you have questions, shoot them at us. We'll get to it.
Please send it to the email that I don't have the password for. We will definitely knock that out.
I just don't know how many more episodes we're going to get into this bit. Okay.
All of them.
Don't know how I feel about that. Going to be completely honest with you. First question comes from Armando Oblando. Fantastic Twitter app, by the way. Who are the best players over 25 that haven't been an all-star? This one made me think a little bit, because there were so many players that I was like, oh, here's the easy answer. And I was like, oh, wait, he made one. Like, Gordon Hayward was one of the first names that I thought of. I was like, oh, crap, I forgot about the one random all-star appearance he had in, I think, 2017, I want to say. So, like, it was fun to kind of go through that hole.
Armando, great question. I spent entirely too much time on this. And like you said, this would have been a much better question or much easier question to answer last year. Would have had at least four guys right off the rip. But
you had Mike Conley first, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been mad easy. This year was kind of tough. And then it was also like, okay, are we talking about the best players right now, like in their current state? or like just over the age of 25 that haven't been an All-Star.
Is this a like, Gallo reference?
Gallo, Lou Will. Like I had some older gentlemen up there, but then I was like, I can't justify that right now.
The Hawks. I love that this basically just turned into the Pacers being my answer at a certain point.
I had a firm top two.
Who was your top two?
CJ McCollum. Tobias Harris.
Okay.
Those are my two firm ones. And then we started to go down a little bit of a slippery slope. I'll just keep going with mine.
Okay, go ahead.
Fred VanVleet.
Okay.
Jeremy Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Clint Capella.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Wood.
Okay.
Aaron Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Smart.
Okay.
And Nurk.
Okay.
And then with the hack, because he said over 25, which made it hard. But when I looked at 25, I added DeJounte.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I didn't think DeJounte for whatever reason. But okay.
I legit had to go to Basketball Reference and sort by age. I promise you, like, behind the curtain, when you said, hey, I sent the questions, this was the first one. I spent at least 15, 20 minutes on this. Like, I have 12 additional names.
Good Lord. You have the All-Star ballot. This is great. Okay, well, I'm glad you have this long list of names because you hit literally everyone on my list except for two players.
Ooh, who you got?
Malcolm Brogdon and Miles Turner were on my list. Oh, excuse me, three names. I can't believe you didn't have JV on your list.
He fell into that older guy category for me.
Ah.
Well, he was the flip side of the other ones. I could justify it now, but maybe not before.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other guys, I could justify it before and not now. So I hit the backspace a few times on his name.
Got you. I'm also very glad that you mentioned Fred VanVleet third. Because he probably should have made the All-Star team last year. This is just going to turn into... We did the Fred VanVleet thing quite a bit last season. All defensive team, All-Star game. Like he had a really good year last year. He's been good this year. Quick shout out to Fred VanVleet. You're already annoyed with me bringing up Fred VanVleet again. Do you want to get to the second question? Just want to, you know, let's double down on the annoyance.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do this. Side note, before you get to this, Jimmy Butler's return to Minnesota, or I guess second return, however many returns, has been hilarious. Every time I look up at the screen, this man is either shouting at a fan or in a stare down with a Timberwolves player. Which is weird because I thought he led the third unit in that practice.
Yeah.
Isn't that all that's left?
Wow. That's a wild stray. Okay. while we're on the Timberwolves, this question comes from Josh, who asked two questions. First, is the Wolves defense legit? And the second question was, how have you felt about Anthony Edwards in his second season? I'll give it to you, our resident Wolves lover.
It is very much so trending towards legit. Like the base is certainly much better, and it's definitely something that could last throughout the season. I like the activity. I think the rotations are a lot better. I think the help defense is a lot better. I think the pressure points aren't as exposed. It's not just, hey, put them in pick and roll, we'll get what we want, those type of deals. And the activity has really jumped out to me. You got Karl Anthony Towns rotating on the weak side just to help on drives. Like, you know, the big question for him was, hey, pick and roll defense, can he do anything? Now this man is like an actual like weak side rotation help defender. You have those players like Beverly and Vanderbilt and McDaniels who have that ability to pressure the ball, keep it in front, and they're helping behind if they get beat, which helps guys like Russell and Edwards and Beasley who may not have the defensive reputation, but now you know where the help is, you know what your job is. It just makes it easier for you as a team. And that's been fun to watch them grow in that area. Like I haven't had an issue with the defense. Sometimes, obviously, because it's based on help, you have your bad nights. That's just how it goes. But This is a team that gets after it. They compete. I did not think that we would be talking about Minnesota's defense at this point in the season with their head coach. I figured we'd be talking about the brilliance offensively and the struggles defensively. And it's kind of flipped. And I don't know how I feel about it. But they get after you, man. Like, Vanderbilt is turning into a pest. Cat is turning into, like, an actual, like, big defender.
Sheesh.
No, like, that's not shade. Like, he was definitely a do-your-job type guy. Like, hey, do this, and we'll protect you. And now he's actually making defensive plays. And that's a big shift for me.
Okay. You cleaned it up, as did Cat defensively this season. I appreciate the vibe here. I see what's going on. But, yeah, like, I'm kind of with Steve here. Like, it does seem like I did not anticipate the Wolves being a legit good defense. Again, hammered the Wolves for playing this deep drop with Cat. I'm just like, he can't do it. This isn't his ministry. Stop it. Put him up to the level of the screen. Force some activity. Y'all have athletes in the forward room, if nothing else. Like, let's get some scramble again. Force some activity. That should be a better suited scheme for everyone involved. And so they've done that this year. And again, heading into the year, I even said, I think the Wolves have a bunch of offensive talent. If the defense can get to 18th, 20th, somewhere in there, instead of being awful, then they have a shot to play in. And they have a top 10 defense right now. And, you know, going over the names you said, Patrick Beverley, still with some juice at the point of attack. Jared Vanderbilt has been everywhere on that back line. Everywhere. Just a fantastic events creator. And, I mean, we're talking about the defense right now, but I really enjoy watching him crash the offensive glass. He is an absolute menace. Flying in from everywhere. But no, like, Jared Vanderbilt does what he does. Patrick Beverley does what he does. Cat, the movement is better in space. Again, like, it's, he gets up to the level. He's able to kind of slow down the ball handler there. I mean, he's still a big body at the end of the day. It's hard to drive around those. It's hard to pass over those. He's doing his job. So as long as they can commit to that consistent energy, and honestly, this is probably the sneaky benefit of their offense not being what you thought it was start of the year. In order to win games while this offense is being sorted out, they've had to defend. Because if they didn't have that, they couldn't stay in games to get some of the late shot making from Anthony Edwards or D'Lo or Cat. So the defense has had to save them in a way. And so as long as that doesn't slip as the offense, you know, improves, I don't see any reason why they can't hang around that, you know, that 10-12 range. And if they're that, they're absolutely going to be a play-in team this year.
No, I'm with you. And I just going back to the defense, I always like to judge, hey, how good is your defense by what are the quote-unquote non-defenders doing? Like, how engaged is Malik Beasley on ball, off ball? How engaged is D'Angelo Russell? Not, no disrespect to those guys, but I don't think you would talk about them in an all-defensive category.
Sure wouldn't.
But if D'Angelo Russell's man is setting a screen and he's jumping out and showing and being active, that tells me, hey, this is something we're talking about. This is something we're locked into. This is something that could last. So salute to Minnesota for that. We've talked about Minnesota for a second straight pod, and you finally got some positive stuff out of me about it.
It only took six pods, but, you know, we got there eventually. And just flowing into the second one on the D'Lo note, he's blocked a few jump shots this year. Like, the energy has definitely picked up for him. But flowing into the second question, Anthony Edwards is another guy. Like, he has not been a great defender this year. I wouldn't say he's been a good defender this year. I think he's been average or slightly below. But the level of energy that he's brought as a weak side, as a nail defender, he is nailing that rotation a lot more than he did last year. He's jumping past the lanes. Like, sometimes it feels like it's very much, my job is to do this, so I'm going to do this instead of reading what's actually happening on the floor. Like, that's typical young player stuff. So, like, that's going to be the next step for him, keeping his head, doing his job and also keeping his head on the swivel. But the fact that we've gotten to this point with him already, and it's such a massive leap from what we saw last season, like, that's a testament to him. That's a testament to his belief in the system. That's a testament to the system itself. Like, he wouldn't buy into it if he didn't think it could work. And so, like, that's been an impressive part of his development in year two for me. The other part, like, he does seem he seems more comfortable getting into his pull-up, which I think is going to be a necessary complement to his game. The worry that I have is that, and this is something we saw earlier this year, like he leans into the pull-up a little bit too much. That was a question with him coming into the league because he took a lot of pull-ups at Georgia. But it does seem like the pick-and-roll craft is growing for him. Again, the defensive energy, defensive effort has improved for him. So that's kind of where I've been impressed, room for growth. Like, again, a little bit more attentive off-ball defensively. And I just want to get downhill more. Like, I posted a clip on my timeline a little bit earlier. I'm watching Heat Wolves. It's currently going on right now as we do this podcast. And, like, he gets Bam Adebayo on an island, just lulls him to sleep with some rhythm dribbles. Bam's in a good stance. And two dribbles, Anthony Edwards just he teleports past Bam and gets a layup before anyone else can react behind him. And it's just like, you know, I don't want to lean into hyperbole and say, like, Anthony Edwards could do that on every possession. But, like, his burst is special. He is a ridiculous vertical athlete. He can get to the rim on just about any possession he wants to. Maybe not to that degree, but he can get to the rim at the very least. And the fact that the percentage of shots that have come at the rim for him has decreased from last season, that's a problem for me. I understand why, because he's trying to develop the jumper. And again, that's going to be important for him moving forward. But, like, your bread and butter should be getting to the rim and get to the free throw line. The free throw attempts are still way too low for a guy of his caliber of athlete.
Well, I think it's an interesting give or take, because I think a couple of pods ago I asked, hey, are you worried that he's like third in the league in FGAs? But at the same time, he's kind of controlling it and trying to develop his game and expand and add to the drive. So now the drive has more impact. So it's kind of like a give and take there. I have enjoyed his season. I mean, obviously the shot selection can get a little crazy at times. Some of the drives can get a little wild, but the special plays he makes, they're growing each game. And secretly at times, he's kind of the guy in the fourth quarter. I think it was against Sacramento. He ended that game. And then he made some big plays in this game against Miami with the jump shot. And him being able to do that really helps this trio of him, Kat, and D'Angelo Russell pop, because now those two can just literally be themselves. You don't have to spam Russell, Kat pick and roll. You don't have to force the post up. You have another guy that teams have to worry about. And once you have three threats, now it's hard to pick which one, and you put yourself in a tough spot. I have enjoyed his progress. You know, I think we asked a lot of questions last year. Can these three work? Can you get Edwards going with Russell? And I think we found out you can. And we found out that he can take the on-ball reps. He can play off-ball. He can attack. He can play in transition. He's been a fun player to watch grow. And it's been a good situation for him.
Yep,
that's legitimately all of the positive Minnesota talk you're getting out of me, unless we have a sponsor in Minnesota or Brock Lesnar tells me to. That's it. No more.
Brock Lesnar, you know what? I don't even want to know.
I think he's from Minnesota. I don't know. I'm just going for it. It's Thanksgiving tomorrow. I got turkey.
Former Viking Brock Lesnar? Okay. Let's move on to the. Oh, goodness. Okay. Next question comes from Aaron, who asked, how can the Lakers make this roster work? Do you guys think they'll get better when they're healthy, or that there are roster flaws that'll hold them back long term? Do you want to take this one, or do you want me to jump in on this?
Well, I think I know where your opinion on it is. I think the interesting part is the answer to his second question is yes to both parts. Like, for me, there's no doubt the Lakers have to find the right combinations to make this work. Having 10 starting lineups in 20 games doesn't really help you with that. And so it's a tough spot, because I just don't, they're trying to figure out so much on the fly. I don't think they know what their best starting lineup is. I don't think they know what their best bench lineup is. I don't think they know what their best small unit is, which hurts you, because now you can't use your roster to your advantage when you play specific teams. You know, you can't go with the, hey, LeBron and shooters lineup. or AD at the five lineup, or hey, this is the defensive lineup to attack. You know, you can't do those things that the Lakers have done before, where they kind of have their deck of cards. They're just trying to shuffle the deck and hope they can stay above water. And you can see guys are still playing their way in and out of the rotation. You know, Malik Monk pops for a while and then he disappears. Kent Bazemore's out. You know, Wayne Ellington is sometimes in and then sometimes he's not. So it's, you don't know who exactly is the right person. And when we talk about the flaws, the big flaw to me is probably just the two-way lineups. Can their best defensive lineup score? Can their best offensive lineup defend? And you also have the whole Russell thing where, okay, we've seen Russell play well. Have we seen Russell play well to impact the team? Yes and no. We've seen Russ play well with AD. We've seen Russ play well with LeBron. We've seen LeBron and AD play well with Russ. So it's like there's enough there to see it, but there's also enough question marks to be like, I'm not sure. You know, like if I asked you, what would you say their best lineup is? And before you answer, keep in mind, this is a team that put LeBron at the five a couple of nights ago. Just that's where they're searching. Like, that is like a playoff level three lineup that they threw out in a third quarter against Boston.
To answer your question, what is their best lineup right now? I guess Russ question mark, Bron, Melo, AD.
You know who the question mark is, right?
Avery Bradley.
That's the answer. If you took the five guys that are playing, quote unquote, the best, it's probably those five. But then you have THT, you have Ellington, you have, it's just, they need to get healthy, find their way. They need Trevor Ariza to come back. I feel like he fixes a lot of this.
I'll say that's also a terrifying thought. If you're like, we're a Trevor Ariza away from figuring this out, then you're not in a great place. And that's not real shade on Trevor Ariza. It's just like, man, Trevor Ariza shouldn't be the one that makes this make sense when you have the star power that the Lakers do.
I think you see what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Guys just haven't played up to that level. Like, the rest thing hasn't come together like you thought it would, maybe. You didn't have THT to balance the bench, so you're hoping Malik Monk does it, and then his defense isn't quite up to par, so now Avery Bradley comes in. Then you realize, hey, we need to just play Avery Bradley as much as we can. That shifts your whole lineup. Now Kent Bazemore sitting down. Now Melo's hitting three, so okay, he's got to be a part of everything. Dwight's coming in, fouling people.
The lone constant. Playing well, playing poorly. Dwight's going to come in and foul people.
Well, that's guaranteed. But then you got Wayne. Wayne's back. Oh, Wayne hit threes. Now we got to play Wayne. There's a lot of moving pieces. I'm not out on the Lakers yet. There's a lot they need to work on. But again, the part to me is if they can find it, then they take off. Question is, are they going to have enough time to find it?
That's a good question. I guess the star answer to this question, like, the Lakers make the roster work. The roster has to be available first, I think, is really where we both are right now. Before we even get into that, like, who do they have? I do think there are some flaws, though. Like, to your point, there is a lack of two-way talent on the roster. And one of the things we talked about before the year was, like, the best version of this team is going to ask LeBron and AD to do a lot of heavy lifting defensively. And to this point of the season, this is one of the worst defensive seasons AD's had in his career. Like, some of that's health, some of that's just early regular season stuff. And a lot of it is just he has to clean up a lot of messes. And so, like, this isn't Anthony Davis is overrated or Anthony Davis won't be able to find it. Because we know when he locks in, he's one of the five best defenders in the sport, conservatively. But he hasn't been able to anchor things in the way that we thought he would. LeBron has been hurt, and LeBron has also lost a step. which is understandable because LeBron James has been playing basketball for a very long time. He's logged a lot of minutes, and he's had to hold an incredible offensive burden throughout his entire career. And so off rip, the best version of this team was, okay, Anthony Davis is going to fly around. LeBron at 36, 37 is still going to fly around. And then you have enough to kind of supplement Russ at the point of attack and all that good stuff. And what's happened is, again, AD's been banged up. AD's had his moments where he just isn't feeling it. LeBron's been in and out of the lineup. Russ has had his moments. Trevor Ariza, who will be another kind of cleanup guy, a lengthy forward on the roster, like he just hasn't been available. You're relying a lot on Avery Bradley. But, you know, this isn't 2016, 2017 Avery Bradley, one. Two, if you're relying on him this much, you're also relying on him to knock down shots. And, like, he isn't a guy that bends your defense in that way. So it goes back to the question of, like, okay, who are the defenders that can also make you pay on the other end? Or who can also help, you know, legitimately space for LeBron, space for AD, space for Russ? And, you know, we talked about Steven Silas at the top having some tough decisions in terms of the rotation and stuff. Frank Vogel has some tough decisions as well. And he's another guy who, you know, he's had tough decisions to make, but hasn't always made the right ones. And so, I mean, there's at least amongst the Laker follows that I have on my Twitter. So that's anecdotal. So that may not be like the overarching thing, but like, seems like Frank Vogel's been questioned quite a bit and his status doesn't seem to be as secure as one would think. So I wonder just how much this kind of turmoil is affecting him, how much it's affecting the team, if at all. So
I was going to say the other thing is they just don't have a thing right now, which hurts your lineup. You know, if you're a defensive-minded team, you may have your second unit be a little bit more offensive-minded, but you know you have guys who are going to fit into that mold. Mm-hmm. The Lakers don't necessarily have their defense in the place they want it to be, and their offense isn't necessarily in the place they want it to be. So when you're searching for that, while also searching for the combination, it just kind of makes it messy sometimes. So I'm still going to give them another block of games to see what they can do. But I'm not out on the Lakers yet. I'm not going to be a part of the LeBron caption at some point, inevitably, when he's listening to Benny the Butcher or something like that.
Oh, goodness. Didn't that tweet come like this offseason? It was like, yeah, please keep telling us about how old we are and all this different stuff. And
just wait for the 5-game win streak.
That'll do it. All right. Next question comes from William, who asks, which player should Cleveland look to trade for to fill the Colin Sexton spot?
Oh, and good questions, Josh and Aaron, just in case I didn't name you by name. Thank you, William, for this question. I'm going to go really, really controversial and say I don't think the Cavs should trade to fill the Sexton spot. Let Darius Garland keep growing and doing what he's doing. Let Ricky Rubio rock out while he's there. See what you can get from Osman and Okoro, and then go ahead and play 98 bigs. It kind of works. So I don't think you necessarily need to fill that Sexton role. I think it kind of helps you out naturally a little bit. Unfortunately, you know, you miss his talent, but you have guys who can grow and have more opportunity. Because I don't want to not be fun and not answer the question. If they had to make a trade, I'd probably prefer they go for like a bench wing. This is no disrespect to Dylan Windler. I have seen him having to guard a lot of people that I'm not sure he should be having to guard, which he's replaced Lauri Markkanen as my, wait, what's happening here? Is this happening on purpose? And he's given the effort. He's trying. How you feel about Bogey? In Utah, it's probably how I feel about Dylan Windler right now. That man is trying. He's giving it his all, sliding his feet, keeping the ball in front, contesting. It's resulting in buckets. So I'd probably say try and get like a bench wing, like get like a Hamidou Diallo or like a Gary Harris. Those are two names that came to mind.
Okay. Interesting.
I would not hate if they could get Buddy Hield. I don't know how the math works on that. I did not open the trade machine because I'm allergic to it.
Allergic to the trade machine.
Yeah, every time, you know, like viruses on computers, every time I try and open it, it just, bleh.
Ah, see, the meta, you go to tradenba.com now. Like that's the new one. We don't use ESPN's trade machine anymore.
I'm an old man.
This is what I'm here for. You know, I give you the tips. I'm kind of with you in terms of like I wouldn't look for like a long-term piece if you're trying to fill the Sexton role. Like I think Sexton's gonna be there long term. And I'm cool with Darius Garland kind of being forced in a way to be this lead ball handler, kind of do everything, just kind of stretch him out because he has the pull-up chops, he has the playmaking chops. The floater's there, he still has a little bit more growth to make as a finisher, but like he has the outlines of like a legit initiator. I think if you're going to look for a spark, it's got to be short term. Like I would wait around the deadline and see if you could snag a Malik Monk out of LA, honestly. Like I think he, like give me 12 off the bench and it wouldn't cost much to get him, I don't think. You're making faces. What's up?
Malik Monk made himself a lot of money last year, in my opinion.
Did he, though? Because the contract he signed with the Lakers.
In theory, he did. And then you take that season, you go to a contender. Now you're supposed to make more money. We win, I play well, sign me up. I feel like he's lost the money that he made.
It's a bit unfortunate. Because, like, you... Like, even if the Lakers start winning, like, if he's out of the rotation, like, what is that really going to do for his market if we're projecting ahead?
Oh, he'll still be fine. If they win, he'll be fine. Winners always get paid. That's the one thing I would – any young basketball player that's out here listening, if you are a part of a successful program or unit, you will be seen in a different light. If my resume said Spurs and Heat instead of Grizzlies and Nets, I wouldn't be here right now.
The dunker spot, who's that? Oh, goodness. I feel that. You would just leave all of my messages on red. It'd be a tough scene.
Oh, but, yeah. Delivered.
Not delivered. That's kind of okay. This next one comes from Alec. It says, in the three championships we've seen since the Warriors, all three teams have had one, power forwards with high-level weak side rim protection. Two, the best player at heights of 6'7", 6'8", and 6'11". Three, a top 10 defense. And four, they started a drop big. What other takeaways do you have from the past three champs?
Let's see if I can not go super cliche. I like their ability to win in different ways in different types of series against different types of teams. So, hey, we can outscore you. We can overpower you. We can defend, figure things out. But that's the hallmark of a champion these days. Like we talk about matchups and they're important, but you have to be able to adjust and figure things out. You know, even with Milwaukee having to go from that Brooklyn to Atlanta, just the different things you have to go through on the way to winning a championship and being able to win in different ways. You know, you may have your base, you may have your scheme. What else can you do? And then can you make that pop the further you go into the playoffs? Can you take more things away? So just the ability to adjust on the fly mid-series, that's impressed me from the last three. And then lineup versatility, having different ways to hurt you to where it's not necessarily our starting lineup is weak, but we have our base. Now we adjust to this lineup. Our bench is contributing. We have a whole bunch of waves that we can throw at you. So, and then I'll throw in a will to win.
Boo. Okay. Well, you pretty much took mine because, like, the scheme versatility was going to be the big one for me because while these three teams started to drop big, they could very much downsize and switch a ton if necessary. So that was big. And, like, in the case of Toronto, they could just do literally everything. So, like, that was going to be my big one. The wild card for me was going to be, like, they all had coaches that they had some question marks about their offense. I think it's the best way to phrase it.
I'm trying to figure out who this is the most slanderous to. And I think it applies. You might have had a good point. That's a good shot. 2 points.
See, there we go. Let me have it. What would be another one? Because again, you've cleaned out my list. No, he wasn't on that team. That's tough. Never mind. It's gonna make a Wes Matthews point, but okay. Did all three have like a random like bench wing that stepped up throughout all the playoff runs?
I'm gonna say yes when I check real quick.
Just trying to make sure I have this. Like Pat Connaughton last year.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you feel about Danny Green.
Yeah, he's high. He started, but he's high variance enough to make the point.
It would be interesting if Danny Green was on all three, but
yeah,
they all had bigs you didn't like.
Wait a minute. Who are the bigs that I didn't like?
Marc Gasol slandered for his defense.
Wait a minute. Let's
see, JaVale.
I was very much
JaVale McGee slandered for his defense. Dwight Howard for sure. Brook Lopez slandered for his defense. That's the trend. I figured it out.
I don't like this bit at all. I don't think I slandered Lopez or Gasol. I don't recall slandering McGee either.
Probably not.
Okay, you know what? That's fine. Jeez. Okay, next question comes from Mac, who asks, what's some of the most low-hanging fruit for NBA offenses in your eyes, and why is it weak side movement?
I'll let you go first on this one. I think you got some good stuff here.
Oh, man, this is a lot that I may not be ready for. Anyway, weak side movement, yes. Honestly, the first thing I thought of was screening. I think if players actually make contact on their screens and angle it in a way to pry your ball handlers free, like the actions run better because you're actually forcing defenses to react. So honestly, if you run your sets with a level of pace, don't start your stuff at 18 on the clock, start it with 21, and the screens connect on whatever you're doing, if it's a pick and roll, if you're running some staggers for a shooter off ball or whatever, like if you actually make contact on the stuff and run it with some verve, like that makes your offense probably like 5% better. Regardless of who your personnel is, if you actually just do it at a regular pace.
I always forget, is low-hanging fruit good or bad?
Like I'd say, it's good. Like it's one of the a simple thing to do to make it better, I guess. It's a bit, another way to phrase it.
Oh, then I'd probably go with pace and tempo. Add to your point. There's no need to walk it up these days. Except maybe in the fourth quarter. I got you. In the clock, sure. I get it. But there's no need to start your set with 16 on the clock. Just get it up and go. Give yourself a chance. Especially if you're not the best offensive unit. Like, I watched the Knicks run the slowest of slow chin actions against the Lakers. To the point where I had to rewind and watch to make sure that's what they were running. And they didn't even execute it. Execution. Just execute your plays. Come on, man.
Look how the Knicks ran in there. Shout out to Chin making a reference on the score, on the podcast.
Yeah, we got
we are deep.
We got to throw some stuff out there. It's a mailbag episode.
We're deep in the weeds. This is what we like.
There's a bag. There's a bag we can get into. We just don't touch it very often.
This is what the dunker spot is for. We got to get to the. We're gonna have like a set play podcast at some point.
Oh God.
Hey man, we. Hey, we figure out the video portion. We can knock this out.
No.
I got in stat. We'll get the clips up and run. Oh, goodness. All right. Next one comes from, I have to read all of this. The display name on Twitter is not Kanye West. The at name is Megastar VC. So you can probably imagine which team this person is a fan of with Megastar VC as an at.
Nets.
You are disrespectful. This is unbelievable. And this is, I like this one because this wasn't even a question. It wasn't even a suggestion. It was kind of a demand, but you know, we'll let it rock. Talk about wide open threes on the Raptors defense, please, in all caps.
All right, let's chat about it because I still like their activity as a unit, but this is a thing. I think a lot of it is their defense is so based on help from the weak side that it just opens things up. Like if you're in pick and roll and you're helping on the roll and that skip is there, that's one thing. But like if you're this much of a protect the paint type team, you're going to help on more drives. And the Raptors are always helping on drives from the nail, from the corner. It doesn't matter. There's going to be bodies in the paint, which is a positive at times and good activity and can really cause some havoc. It can also open a lot of things up. And I feel like that overhelp gets them in trouble. And then just the help in general, that means you got to close back out. That's another rotation. So now if you get beat there, now you're really in trouble. So it's just kind of sometimes just like a spinning wheel of chaos. They sell out to protect the paint.
That they do. So something I've been pondering on the Raptors defense today in particular, since we had the mailbag question, but as much as we talk about the Raptors defensive versatility, and they are like Nick Nurse is a madman on that end. I almost said Nick Curse. That's not what we need, but he's a madman on that end. They have a bunch of pieces. Like, I guess I'll flip this to you first. How do you feel about the Raptors as a drop team?
I like the idea, but it depends on the personnel.
And that's kind of what I'm getting into. Like, I don't know if, I mean, Raptor fans talk about it a ton, but like in non-Raptor dumb, I guess, I'm not sure we talk enough about like their big man rotation as it relates to their defense. They kind of have to fly around to a certain extent, because otherwise, like, as great of a shot blocker as Chris Boucher is, like him actually like navigating the gap and drop is not great. Kim Birch knows where to be, but like he's not stopping lobs. And if you have a point guard that's going to snake and then draw him on the late switch, he's kind of dead in the water. And then who else are you playing? Like among their actual center room, who else are you playing? If it ain't Chris, if it ain't Kim and it ain't Chris. So, like, I worry, like, if you go, I mean, they played Pascal at the five at times this year. If you downsize that way, like, you're not playing drop with Pascal. And also, if he's at the five, then I'm worried a little bit about the defensive rebounding at least. And so, like, it's kind of, it doesn't feel like, to me at least, it doesn't feel like they have that in their bag. And that kind of forces them into a little bit more activity and more rotations.
You feel like they don't have drop in their bag?
I don't feel like they, not comfortably, no.
I think with Kim, you can do it. I don't like that it's a staple. Like, I wish there was a little bit more versatility there, because you have a versatile unit and it feels like it's drop, switch, or do stuff.
17 zones.
Yeah, and so I kind of wish, like, they have the personnel, they have the talent. I just feel like sometimes they put themselves in a bind, and I wish they had a little bit more of a solid base at times. Like, I get why they do what they do, but if you could just kind of turn down the volume a little bit. Kind of reminds me of, like, the opposite. You know, like, when Miami used to just really show all the time, and it was like, hey.
Yes.
Like, that's great, but you don't have to keep doing that. I feel like that's kind of where I'm at with Toronto with the drop.
This is how I felt about Miami last week, watching them play the Pelicans, and they're like blitzing Devontae Graham, and it's that's whatever. Okay, but yeah, I understand where you're coming from. A quick sound on the Raptors defense: they are allowing the largest share of corner threes in the league again, 13.6%. So, yeah, they get up a lot. Oh, that's what I wanted to mention on that front. So heading into tonight, at the very least, again, they've given up this incredibly large share of corner threes. These are, do I still have this up? I do. Oh, it updated. That's tough. You know what? Never mind on the stat front. The Raptors give up a lot of corner threes. That's what we're rolling with. Let's move on to the next question.
It's the first time we did not get the Nikialytics, folks.
I had it ready, but since games are going on, like, the stat page updated. So and they're not available because they're updating. So that's just kind of tough. This one comes from a guy, Lazarus, who asks, is Memphis a good, bad team or a bad, good team?
Given the circumstances, I'm probably going to go with bad, good team. Like, I think they're good. There's good there, but there's such a weird combination right now of learning how to win and also learning how to get out of their own way that you just don't know. Like, I don't know what Grizzlies team to expect. And they don't necessarily have a thing, you know, like they're good. They're talented. They can hurt you on both ends if they're right, but you're not expecting the defense every night and the offense can be an adventure. So it's kind of a yin yang deal. And you see that in the results, like you see flashes of them arriving where it's like, ooh, they're coming. And then you see, oh, maybe not. Like, I mean, they lost to Minnesota by almost 40, and they go beat Utah in a close game on the road, and they come back home and lose to Toronto. Like, it's just, there's no telling what you're going to get.
I'm with you. I think they're a bad, good team right now, namely because the defense is just not at all where I thought it was going to be this year. Like, the personnel isn't drastically different than it was last season, and yet they have fallen off a cliff. I mean, part of that is just the three-point defense, and I was talking a little bit about, I mean, we just talked about Toronto's three-point defense, and particularly what they give from the corners. Check NBA.com earlier today, so I'm not sure what the numbers are going to be after tonight's slate of games, but opponents were shooting 49.5% on corner threes against Memphis. And, like, that just isn't sustainable. I'm sorry. Like, you're just not going to give up 50% from the corners in an 82-game sample. Like, that's just not going to happen. So, like, once that comes down even a little bit, like, the defensive rate is going to improve by default. They've been killed by, like, three-point shooting luck in that regard. So we'll see. But, yeah, to your point, like, you know, aside from that, like, I still don't know what to expect from them defensively. I think Dylan Brooks just was out again tonight. So, like, I think getting him back consistently is going to help them in that regard, particularly against, like, those scoring wings that they'll face. But I think you clean up the defense. Like, I think everything else will kind of clean itself up.
Yeah, I think there's a, you know, it's tough to be that kind of team in the Western Conference, but they're hanging around. I mean, they're still right there. The West is so, the like 4-10 being a game and a half difference is a fun subplot that I didn't see coming. And there's so many teams that could go on a run and you never know what's going to happen. But with Memphis, you know, they'll have their day. There's no disdain.
Oh, God. Go on.
Because they have Desmond Mine.
As soon as I heard disdain, I was like, oh, he's doing the thing. Okay, very cool.
I'm running out of words to rhyme with Maine, by the way, just so you know. Just a little peek behind the curtain. It's getting a little tougher.
I'm going to send you a thesaurus for Christmas this year.
You know it's hard out here for... Nope, not doing it. Sorry.
Okay. All right. We have... I now know what I'm randomly going to get tweeted about on Saturday when people get to this part of the pod. This is why I subscribe to the Dunker Spot. Okay. This next question, I hope I don't butcher the name. You are allowed to block me on Twitter if necessary. Tyrion, I believe is what it is, who asks, is there any hope for my Spurs?
You got 4 wins and you're 4.5 out of the play-in, so there's your hope.
Wow.
The offense has been where I thought it would be. The issue is I don't think they have enough shooting or defense to make this work. Like, they've got DeJounte going. Keldon Johnson's there. Poeltl's playing well, but what else do you have? So you're a competitive team that can't really guard and sometimes can't score. That's not the recipe you want in the West. All due respect. I'm sorry, Pop.
Okay. I will also say no. I guess I just won't be as harsh about it as you were. I think they have some interesting young pieces highlighted by DeJounte Murray. Jakob Poeltl remains the best rim protecting big that people don't talk about enough and we should probably talk about him a little bit more. It would help if San Antonio was better, so you get a little bit more limelight. But that's what this podcast is for, to highlight him anyway. He's really freaking good at defense. We talked about drop a little bit earlier. Jakob Poeltl's one of the best drop defenders in basketball. More Devin Vassell. Just let him extend his game, expand his game a little bit more. If there are some legit shot creation chops there, I think, that are worth exploring. I would like to see a little bit more from Lonnie Walker this year.
Lonnie Walker and Derek White, what's up?
Yeah, it would be nice if Derek White could knock down some shots. That would be helpful for everyone involved.
I'm going to be positive. The Fiesta court is fire, and so are the uniforms.
That's probably like a 5.5 on the on the scale of the patronizing scale. We'll give it a 5.5. Flirting with a six. Let's stay in the West. This one comes from James, who says, the Blazers have put together a nice streak at home. Have they turned the corner, or is this fool's gold?
Ooh, this is a fun one. I've remained intrigued by the Blazers, and I'm probably higher than most people. I mean, they're 9-1 at home. They're tied with the Warriors for the best home record in the league. And they got, I think they're tied for the most home wins, but they're 1-7 on the road. And that they need to figure out how to pack the game up. I mean, because if they're 4-3 on the road, they're the 3 seed in the West. And we're having a whole different conversation with this Blazer team. For me, it's one of those deals where you have Dame back to playing at this level with CJ still playing at this level. And then you throw in the things they've tried to add on both ends of the floor for the long term. And they've got more flow offensively, more handoffs. They've got more schemes defensively to give themselves a shot. So, again, I think these changes they've tried were clearly for a longer run at the playoffs. Now, the only question is, for me, again, can they win enough to put themselves in a position to where right. It actually counts? Because, you know, can they find the matchup or the matchups that actually will work? Them and the Clippers just don't mix. I feel like I've watched the same Portland Clippers game for the last 2.5 years. Them and the Suns just don't really work either. So it kind of feels like how I felt about the Knicks last year, where, hey, if they can get to the 4 spot, they can make some noise. If the Portland can get to the 4 spot and play the right team, they might be able to make some noise. But they've got to be able to find the consistency. You know, it's tough to be in the West and have so many highs and so many lows. And, you know, can they show that they can compete against the big teams? But overall, I've liked what they've done. You know the rotation. You know the guys who are going to play. You're getting contributions from your bench guys. You have more options defensively. Your guys are playing well. There's an upside there.
Okay, I feel it. You said got to figure out how to pack the game on the road. I thought you were going to go with pack the Dame on the road and just lean right into the pun, but you didn't.
So. Missed a layup right there.
Truly hate to see it. It's fine, though. It's fine. It's late.
CJ McCoffrey.
It's late. All right, you made up for it. That's cool. I would like to see, you know, they are trying more things defensively. I want to see a larger sample of the defense looking decent before I fully buy in. So I'm not going to go full-blown fool's gold, but I'll just say I'm like in wait-and-see mode. Because like with Dame struggling to start the year, like you knew he was going to make shots at some point, and like he's making them now. CJ's been incredible all year long. So if the defense can hold serve for a little bit longer, then I'm like, okay, they may have turned a corner. For me, at least, I don't know what turning the corner really does for me, because I don't think they're like in the elite tier in the West, even when healthy and rolling. So like turning the corner may still put them in like the 4-6 range for me. And it's just like, okay, cool. You're not Phoenix. You're not Utah. So I just need to see a little bit more Portland before I'm comfortable at any rate.
Yeah, that's fair. I wouldn't put them in that top tier, but they're definitely in that Dallas Clipper Memphis mix. And if the Lakers are going to be this version, there's an opportunity, you know. But I do think it is going to be they got to get that 4 seed or face Utah.
This just makes me sad. This makes me sad about Denver all over again, because good Lord, man, they're so good when they're healthy. and they just can't get there. It freaking stinks. All right, this one comes from Nate. Says, excluding Klay Thompson, name one player on a contender. Well, yeah, name one player on a contender that has an X factor that could change the trajectory of the season if things go right.
Kyrie count.
Ah, he is technically a member of the Brooklyn Nets, so that would be, yeah.
Figured I'd give it a shot.
I'm glad someone did.
I guess for me, it would the only names I could come down with, because you said contender, which made it a little tougher. I did not count Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
I went Oladipo question mark. And I went Rudy Gay question mark. Now, the Oladipo thing, because if he can come back and be the version we saw last year, that makes things really interesting for Miami, especially lineup-wise. You got some really fun things you can do. For Rudy Gay, it's if Utah can actually get consistency at the four and then also go small, they got a different dynamic that can help them later in the playoffs. So those are probably the two that I had. I mean, Phoenix is Phoenix. Golden State's Golden State. I couldn't use Klay, so yeah. You got me, Nate. You got me handcuffed, trapped in the corner. I had to call timeout.
No, I feel it. Victor Oladipo was mine. Beyond that, I guess either of the Milwaukee starters that are out right now would probably be second up for me. Rudy Gay's a good one, by the way. But Depot is at the top of my list because more Depot means less need for either Gabe Vincent, who played well tonight for what it's worth, and has played pretty well recently, but healthy Oladipo that can provide some defense and some shooting and some rim pressure replaces either Gabe Vincent or Caleb Martin on that bench crew to take some of the creation burden off of Tyler Hero on the second unit. So that would be helpful. But yeah, like we haven't seen Dante DiVincenzo yet. And Brook Lopez is a mystery man right now.
Dante's a good one. Dante with this Bucks team, I think we forgot how good Dante had become.
Yes.
Pre-injury. So I think that's a good one. And they won in spite of it. So that might be the one, honestly. I like that one. I also enjoy the Miami bench just throwing Gabe Benson and Caleb Martin and Markieff Morris at you and Udonis Haslam.
Oh, don't slip him in there. don't troll me. This one comes from Nicolo. I hope I said that right. You also have license to block me if I did not. Asked, regarding the Bulls, should I be concerned about their lack of a proper wing defender, the role Patrick Williams was supposed to fill? Will they find problems against athletic marvels like Giannis or Joel Embiid, or do they have the personnel and the schemes to pull it off come playoff time?
That's a good question, Nicolo. My concerns that I first had when I read the question were the KD matchup, maybe the James Harden matchup, just because of the potential of switching, and then Giannis. I don't know if you have an answer for those three. I'd also like to throw in a bonus of being concerned about facing the Hawks and Trae Young if they were to see them early, just because of the volume of pick and rolls you're going to see and the roster you currently have. And we've seen what happens when Atlanta has that going and you can't figure it out. Makes it tough. Embiid, not so much. It's not because Embiid isn't good. He's obviously a top-tier talent. I do trust the Bulls' help defense. I do trust Billy Donovan's ability to double and scheme his way out of that to at least get enough comfort to bother or feel comfortable with what Embiid is doing. I think with Chicago, it's clear. Between Caruso, Lonzo, and Javante Green, they feel they have enough guys to deal with those guys. Now, I'm not going to argue if it's going to go great or go well, but I think they feel like they have the activity that it's going to work in the base scheme of help to where they're going to take away the lanes, try and force you into a certain direction, and that type of deal. So that's where the confidence lies for Chicago there, but there are some guys that I would be concerned about.
Okay, that's fair. I am a little bit concerned. Like, I particularly a Milwaukee matchup. Because one, Giannis is just freaking incredible. But, like, they don't really have the body type They don't have the guy to guard him. Like, Patrick Williams is going to be their best bet. And, like, even Patrick Williams doesn't have – I don't think he has, like, the strength really to deal with Giannis post-ups consistently. And so, to your point, like, they do have – like, Lonzo is an incredible help defender. Alex Caruso, as much as I rave about what Fred VanVleet does, it's like a guy that helps at the nail or digs down the strips at post-ups and stuff like that. Like, Alex Caruso is also relentless in that. And so you can see a situation where, like, they're just – they're waiting on the Giannis post-spin and getting some steals out of there, or at least trying to. But Milwaukee can also spread the floor around that. And so with Chicago, they already are an activity-based defense. Against Giannis in particular, they don't have a matchup, you know, a physical matchup to even really make him think about it. So they have to be an activity-based defense at that point because they don't have anyone that can stand them up. And so once you also have, and then you have shooters around that, that could be a series that could get pretty ugly with the passing improvements that Giannis has made.
I'm going to throw a curveball here just for fun. Okay. Would Chicago like the Milwaukee matchup? Like, Giannis presents an issue, but in theory, we could put DeMar or LaVine on Middleton and just contest. Mm-hmm. We could put the other one on Drew. Hey, just contest and hope we get Giannis to take some pull-ups. I don't know. Throwing it out there. Put Caruso on Giannis. Ah, I said that out loud. No, I don't like, but don't put Caruso on Giannis.
Why has Caruso only played 17 minutes in this game? But no, I think Chicago, like, if you're looking at the upper echelon of the East, if you're power ranking, like, would Chicago rather see, you know, between Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Miami, Atlanta, then I can see the argument to where Milwaukee is at, is near or at the top of that list. Just because, like, you can put, like, if you're doing it that way, like, it's probably, honestly, if you're going to stash somebody on Giannis, like, it would probably be DeRozan. If you're going to go curveball,
that is,
and you send Caruso to help.
That is a good curveball. And then all of a sudden, game one, we get tweets. Look at DeMar playing defense.
I mean, DeMar basically played the four the second half of the year in San Antonio. So, like, I think that would be to say, hey, be strong. We're going to send Caruso every time Giannis puts the ball on the floor, and we'll rotate behind that. Like, LaVine, for the off-ball exploits he still have, like, he has turned himself into a pretty decent on-ball defender at least. So if it's just, hey, stay in front of Chris Middleton and contest. Chris is one of the best contested shot makers in the league, but, like, he ain't creating a bunch of separation. So I can see the argument for Chicago be like, hey, if we got to face one of these teams, like, I can see that being it. I think it would be Milwaukee and then Miami in some order, just because Miami has their own question marks in the half court in terms of scoring.
The team just said, I'd probably say they'd want Miami, Milwaukee, Atlanta, and Brooklyn.
That sounds about right. That sounds about right. All right. Next question is going to come from Daniel, who asked, how do you feel about the trio of Josh Richardson, Romeo Langford, and Aaron Nesmith recently, as they've seen more minutes in Jaylen Brown's absence? How would you prioritize playing time between the three of them with Brown back in the lineup?
It's been nice to see Josh Richardson actually do basketball things again and yes, play well. So that's been fun. And despite the record, to me, if you were able to get Schroeder going and you were able to get Josh Richardson going while Jaylen Brown was out, that's a win for Boston. And so if you can keep Richardson playing this way as he returns, that's a big positive. You know, helps you balance lineups, gives you a punch, all that good stuff. Langford still intrigues me. I just don't know what he brings every night. Potential's still completely there, but the consistency isn't there, and that role playing time doesn't necessarily give him the reps needed for that to be found. You know, you're trying to win, so you might go with two guard, smart shooter together. You got Tatum Brown. You got multiple combinations where he might get squeezed. So I would just like to see him maybe just get a block, maybe get some run consistently. But it's tough when you also have Josh Richardson that you're trying to get going. Nesmith feels like he's stuck in shoot or sit mode. Like, hey, here's your 4 minutes. Space floor, knock some shots down. You didn't knock any shots down? Here's your 2 minutes. Oh, you didn't make? Okay, come on back. And that's unfortunate. Yeah, but that's just, I mean, when you have that kind of wing guard room, it makes it a little bit tough. I'd go Richardson, Langford, Nesmith right now.
I'm so disappointed we have the same order. Like, I'm excited because I'm right, because you have this. I'm also disappointed because, like, there's no, what is the banter here? I agree. Oh, goodness. But no, I'm right there with you. Like, I think Romeo Langford in particular, he's going to earn minutes just by virtue of the way that he defends. Like, I think Josh Richardson, he's the vet. In theory, you know what he brings. It's just up to him to bring it consistently. And we haven't seen him bring it consistently since the Miami year. So it would be nice for him to get back to bringing that consistently. But Langford's interesting because, again, he not only a good wing defender, he can defend different types of players. And so if he has that going, he's going to get minutes. And if the shot's falling for him, then he's definitely going to get minutes. And I'm with you. Like, I like the element of movement shooting that Nesmith provides in theory, but if he isn't knocking down no shots, like, you know. So there we go. This is the I agree with Steve hour here at the dunker spot. Very cool. Very cool indeed.
Best episode we've ever had.
Oh, brother. Next one comes from Jared, who wants us to do a trust ranking between Darius Garland, De'Aaron Fox, Cole Anthony, DeJounte Murray, and D'Angelo Russell.
Oh, I like that list, Jared. That's well done. That's a dunker right there. That's a true dunker spot list right there. Night to night trust. I will go first, if you don't mind.
Oh, that's fine.
I'll go bottom to top. No disrespect. It's Cole Anthony at the bottom.
Okay.
Kid can play, but you never know if it's going to be 9 for 20 or 15 for 25. I'm going to go current version De'Aaron Fox next. Him and Shea are tied.
Oh, nah. Don't try to throw Shea in it. Shea has graduated from the list. I'm glad we're all on the same page here. Go ahead.
Not according to Bleacher Report. D'Angelo Russell is third for me.
Okay.
Darius Garland, the way he's been playing, is going to get number two. And then DeJounte gets number one.
Okay. I'm trying to throw a Shea shot in there because you got De'Aaron Fox at the bottom. Don't like it. Don't like it at all. Okay. I go Garland 1, Murray 2. Fox 3, Russell 4, Anthony 5. Actually.
Interesting. D'Angelo Russell.
I might want to amend this already. Garland and Murray are locked in at 1 and 2 for me. Fox, Russell, Anthony. That probably does it for me. Because at the very least, there's a level of Russell versus Anthony is interesting to me. Because Cole has taken some steps as a point of attack defender. And he's also adding value as a rebounder that I did not anticipate at all.
It's a good list.
It is a really good
list. Cole Anthony's having a good year.
He is.
Salute to him. I think he's found his niche. Now, I'd like to see it a little bit more efficient. Maybe not so volume-based, but he's coming along. He's a hooper. He's a gamer. Orlando's his city.
It's a good callback. All right. Our last one is going to come from Gabriel, who wants us to power rank these big men. Nick Claxton, Mo Bamba, Jackson Hayes, Bol Bol, and Zach Collins.
Oh, this is also, hey, it's a salute to you, Gabriel. This is also a dunker right here. Take off 2 feet, two-hand dunk. I guess I'll go first, right?
Yeah, you take it.
Bol Bol's number five.
Okay.
I've got Zach Collins number four. Jackson Hayes number three. Top two was a lot tougher than I thought after second thought.
Hmm.
Current version, number two, is Nick Claxton.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I have people calling a young person's phone. It's Mo Bamba.
You know what? All right. You got it. I feel like I am contractually obligated to put Bol Bol at one. Sue me. Bol at one. The rest of the list will be a little bit more accurate to what we've seen on the court this year. So I'd probably say Bamba, and then, I mean, Claxton just hasn't done much of anything this season, which stinks.
Nick Claxton's still a very good basketball player. I don't want that to get lost into the jokes and everything. It's unfortunately he's gotten hurt because it was clear, at least the idea was to get him going and continue him in a kind of a linear way. So I would like to see him continue to grow because he had an impact. He earned all those minutes. So no knock on Nick Claxton. It's just got to get out there.
There it is. So, I mean, if we're assuming like Claxton gets back to form when he's healthy, then we'll go Bamba, Claxton, Hayes, Zach Collins, Bol Bol at one. Take that, Chandler. A shot for one of our fellow dunkers.
Shots fired.
Bol at one. Steve, what's the Thanksgiving plate this year?
Oh, everything. I don't even look. I throw everything on a plate. I grab one fork and I eat. What you mean? There's no breakdown here. It's the only meal of the year where I mix my food. I go to each thing that has a dish and boop, 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 boop. One fork, sit down, bam. Breathe. Go back. Seconds. Take a nap.
Thirds.
Take a nap. Big plates. We're talking big plates here. No. I get a little bit of everything, man. I honestly don't care what you make. If it's in front of me, it's going on the plate. And I'm gonna
some bars.
I'm gonna mix it together and make myself a savory mashup of flavors. No cranberry sauce though.
Okay.
You keep your cranberry sauce. You know you can do it with your cranberry sauce.
All right. Thank you for listening to this. Nope, we are keeping the clean rating on this here podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your pods, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Happy Thanksgiving to those who celebrate it. Otherwise, I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend, and we will catch y'all next week.
Whoever didn't make mac and cheese well for you, I am so sorry. It is so good.